Hold on, let me take a moment to form my thoughts here.
Moments. I just ramble at the mouth.
Welcome to the Square Peg Show Season Finale Part 2. I'm Mike.
And I'm Jesse.
We promised some Interstellar talk and some Marvel talk.
Yes.
So let's get straight to it. Now, let's pick up where we were last episode, where we were talking about kind of the science of things lately with...
artificial intelligence?
Yes. Stephen Hawking had a big opinion on that. Stephen Hawking was actually in my head a lot when I was watching Interstellar.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about this, it's kind of... Interstellar's been out for quite a while now.
Yeah.
You want to go spoilery or no?
Yeah, I mean, we can...
All right, so let's talk about the story of Interstellar, the science of Interstellar, and the IMAX of Interstellar. I feel like those are the three big pieces to hit here.
Yes.
You want me to start with a story recap?
Sure.
Interstellar, Matthew McConaughey is the protagonist, obviously. His character, he's in a dying kind of world,
right?
Wouldn't you say? Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems like... And I love the way that they did the reveal of how things are going. It seemed like it was present day until he gets into kind of a teacher-parent conference.
Mm-hmm.
And they start talking about, hey, we don't need engineers. We need farmers.
Right.
And also the textbook debate.
Yes. Which is one of the things that bugged the shit out of me.
All right, we'll put a pin in that. But the story basically is that he gets recruited to be on a mission to travel through a wormhole or black hole?
It's pretty much a wormhole, yeah.
Okay. And that's the big thing. Mm-hmm. You know, they say, hey, we can explore beyond this. And they go out past Jupiter?
Mm-hmm.
Is that where the black hole is?
I think so, yeah.
And then they try to explore the other worlds in that, what, alternate dimension? No, it's not a dimension.
No, they were in another solar system, another part of the galaxy.
Right. So it's kind of like warp speed.
Right.
Okay, so that's the premise of the black hole. Basically the setup of the movie, and then they explore lots of things there. Meanwhile, he is dealing with kind of some angst because he left his children behind.
Right.
And he left all of humanity behind. His goal is to save humanity.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he was kind of tricked into that a little bit.
Well, when they sent him off, they had two plans. Either find a habitable world or take this, I don't know, biomaterial and plant it and let it recolonize.
Michael Caine kind of told him about the mission. Also starred Anne Hathaway, special appearance by Matt Damon in the middle of the movie, or somewhat. It was a 2-hour, 45-minute movie.
Yeah, it was a long one.
That's the gist. I mean, it's not a great synopsis, but that's kind of the gist of it.
Right.
So let's get into the story a little bit.
Yes. As far as the story is concerned, I don't know. It's like they wanted to set up this world, and like you said, it was dying. And what was cool about it was that they didn't really just shove it in your face.
Yeah.
It wasn't all up in your grill. It was just like, okay, this is kind of happening. Why is everyone growing so much corn? Why is everything on fire every once in a while? And they don't, like I said, push it right into your mouth. They ease you into it. And I like that part.
I remember seeing McConaughey's character takes his daughter and his son to see the New York Yankees.
Right.
But the Yankees are not even a single-A baseball team at this
point.
Yeah.
It's just like a bunch of guys, you know, when they're all done with work, they play baseball.
Yeah, I think that's kind of like how little entertainment, including sports, matters in this world.
Absolutely. Know, so. But yeah, I mean, it kind of focuses around him, who's apparently a former NASA pilot.
Yeah, I guess so.
And, you know, turned farmer because that's what you need. You have to eat. And
he's very unsatisfied with his life. Yeah. He's still kind of pining for what he felt like was his calling, you know.
And then his daughter, whom they named Murphy, after Murphy's Law. She's very much science-oriented kind of thing, and that's when they got to the whole thing where they're like,
she was like 13 or some such when he left.
And they're like, you know, we don't need, you know, engineers, we need farmers, that kind of thing. Anyway, he ends up having to leave her, which she hated the whole thing, and then the whole thing kind of focuses around time dilation, because you got two things going on. You have, like, the quote-unquote present for Matthew McConaughey's character, and then you have an abundant amount of time that's passed for his children. So they were very young when he left, and then as we keep going back to them every once in a while, they're much, much older and much, much older.
There's a specific scene where McConaughey and his crew, which was like, I think maybe three members?
Yeah, three or four people.
Yeah, had a debate. Hey, this is risky. If we go off and do this, then because of that time, what you call it?
Time dilation.
Then, I don't remember the specific numbers, but something like if we're an hour outside of the ship, then that's 7 years back home or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. And the whole thing was that they were they had to go close to a black hole in order to check out this one thing, something like that. And what happens is, you know, as they're going close to the speed of light, you know, time feels normal for you, but it's actually going much slower for you is what's happening, and everyone behind you who's under the regular sun and such is, you know, living through their lives like normal, but it's happening a lot different as far as their, you know, their point of reference and your point of reference. So, you know, it's a lot of debate as far as they had to go down to this planet. They were only down there for like 3 hours or something. They came back and like 23 years had passed for the one guy they left behind, which I thought was odd, because after 7 years I'd be like, okay, they're not coming back.
You don't think your survival mode would kick in?
After 7 years, it would have kicked in and kicked off, and I'd have been done.
Well, one thing you said after the movie, we didn't talk about it too much afterwards, but one thing you said was, this is a very smart movie.
Yes.
And I agree. I mean, obviously, Christopher Nolan put a lot of thought into the science behind it.
Yes. And there's a fine line that you have to walk with that kind of thing, because while it does try to ground itself in real-world advanced physics, you have to be able to explain it to an audience who's not into advanced physics for them to understand it. That's one. But then, secondly, you have to be able to fudge some things to make the story work. I understand that, but, and I'm sure it appeals to the mass majority of people, but, you know, I like that whole physics angle. Now, I'm not here to tell you I'm an advanced physicist by any means, but, you know, I listen to Neil deGrasse Tyson, and he just lulls me to sleep, and I'm like, I believe anything this guy says because he's...
You mean that as a compliment?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And, but Neil deGrasse Tyson was actually, I mean, he would pick nits, but he seemed to be a fan.
Nitpick.
That's probably a better way to say that.
Yes.
Now, when we did the podcast about Guardians of the Galaxy, I was kind of like poking at you, you know, hey, man, you don't need too much time to digest this movie. Right, I'm actually glad we waited a while for Interstellar to digest it, because it's really a movie that makes you think.
It does. It does.
Now that, I don't know how long it's been since we saw the movie. It was a ways after the release, but it's been a ways since we've seen it. Do you have, on a scale of 5 stars, I'm just curious, like, what would you give it?
I would give it 4.5.
I'd probably give it about 4.
Yeah, I'd probably give it about 4.5 burning cornfields. I mean, because, you know,
the science really does detract from the movie for you, whereas me, I'm like, hey, man, give me some technobabble.
Right.
As long as it's convincing enough, I'm good, because I don't have that scientific mind.
Right. And, I mean, it's just small things. I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not just like a plot device. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they are using it, like, as far as the time dilation is concerned, it's not just, hey, this is going to happen because. It's like, this is going to happen because when you move, you know, close to the speed of light, things change, blah, blah, blah. They kind of explain it a little bit, and that, you know, most of that stuff is real.
I want to hear the problems that you had, though.
Well,
I'm curious.
One of the things specifically was, and I actually had to go back and think about this one for a little bit, but the textbook debate. One of the things that they were saying in it, the teachers and Matthew McConaughey kind of had a debate as far as something. The textbooks got changed at some point in this dystopian kind of a future.
They didn't believe the accomplishments of the moon landing.
The textbooks actually said the moon landing never actually happened. It was just said that it happened so that the way that Russians would go bankrupt trying to win the space race, something like that.
I felt like that was a point where the future had gotten so that they kind of propagandized the past a little bit. Yeah.
And what I was trying to figure out was, were they actually saying that? Do they actually believe that or not? Is what I was trying to figure out. Did they actually believe that the moon landing never happened? And, you know, that's why they said that. Or did they know it happened, but they wrote it that way to make the Russians go?
Do you remember what year this movie was set in? I don't think they ever said it in the movie.
No, I don't think they ever actually said it.
McConaughey was pretty convinced. But if all the source material of the moon landing wasn't available to the average person, then perhaps it was just like kind of an urban legend at that point.
Right.
Like nobody knew anymore, which made me feel like somebody had to be like actively trying to, you know, hide this.
Right.
I don't know why. They didn't really
I don't
go
either,
into that.
But my whole issue is that there's actually something, you know, when they went to the moon, because I don't care what any of the people out there say, we have been to the moon, they put mirrors up there. And you can actually shoot a laser. And we have to have certain equipment, but you can actually fire a laser to one, you know, a certain coordinate on the moon because it's geosynchronous. You just hit this, measure for it to come back because it does come back. So that's proof that we've been there to put those things there. But that's what I was trying to figure out. In the movie Mythos, are they saying that that the moon landing happened and we changed it because of the Russians, or we actually don't think it ever happened and here's why we ever said it?
I don't know.
That was one of the things.
It felt like it was supposed to give you a little texture of the world.
Yeah.
But as far as the interpretation of that, I'm not quite sure.
To me, that was just like a sore thumb and I couldn't get past it. I was weird, like, fucking weird, what's actually happening?
Uh-huh. So that's all part of the setup, the scientific setup of the movie, but the scientific payoff of the movie, and we've already said we're spoiling it for people that haven't heard this, is it becomes, you give all the science stuff, and then when McConaughey's character actually gets to the destination, to me it becomes much more of a metaphysical kind of emotional finale because it deals with his connection with his children, or specifically his daughter. Now, you know, I've had some time to think about this because it's been a while since I still don't like that payoff. I wish that they had done something different than just connect it to that character.
Right.
Obviously, if a different person traveled through this whole thing, they would experience a whole other thing, right? But I read something online was like, because the whole thing is like he's behind a bookcase and he's trying to like signal his daughter. Because, you know, there was the ghost at the beginning, and he was the ghost.
And it's a big circular plot device, right?
Right. And I was just kind of groaning a little bit during that. It's like, you know, move a little book here, move a little bit. I'm contacting through Morse code my daughter from...
Yes.
That's like, just write a little note. Stick it through the bookcase. She can read it.
Yeah.
What?
So, okay. All right, so this was my whole issue with it. Number one, they went into a black hole for this to happen, okay? This is when everything kind of started falling apart for me. So as far as what they're saying is that you could live through going through a black hole, even though the gravity is so high that light cannot escape. So you're not crushed. You are then picked up by these other beings and then placed behind your daughter's bookshelf in time. Okay, so what he was doing was he was like, God, what was it? There was the watch. That's what it was, the watch. Okay, he was able to communicate...
Via Morse code
with the watch to his daughter in order to solve this crazy huge equation and save the world, okay?
Right, because she could get that message and then therefore be able to do the scientific bullshit on Earth in order to save the human race.
So, he's moving the second hand of the watch, okay? How fucking long would he have had to be there to be pressing that watch? Did she miss it the first time around? And she's like, fuck, I haven't been writing this down. How many times did he do it? How many times was he back there pressing? And then they showed her in some office somewhere else, not even in the house where the gravitational distortion happened. Was he still pressing the watch? Because she's looking at it writing down. I'm like, fucking, he's not there.
I think that basically the climax of the movie was a dreamlike situation.
Yeah.
And hey, this movie was great with emotions, I felt like, towards the first act, maybe second act, because I really felt for the McConaughey's character and his daughter and she not wanting him to leave and desert his family. He was a single parent. That really kind of resonated with me, but then they required, like, complete emotional ending to this, and they had introduced all this cool scientific plot shit where all of that fell away, and it was just emotional shit at the
end.
And
it was just sci-fi emotion.
And then he has to go and rescue Anne Hathaway, which you don't even see at the end. That's a loose thread, and that's his next big mission or some shit. I mean, they're not going to do a sequel, I don't think. But that kind of, I think that's a downfall of Christopher. I love Christopher Nolan. Memento.
Mm-hmm.
Inception. I know you and I disagree on that one. Even most of the Dark Knight stuff, he's a great filmmaker.
Yes, absolutely.
No doubt. And
high concept stuff, and I applaud him for that, for sure. But, I mean, when, again, and this was my problem with Inception, when you set something up this certain way, don't rake the table off and then say, never mind, look at this pretty picture of unicorns. Aw.
It would be cool as a storyteller if you establish, you know, 9, 10, a Nolan movie, like 30 rules.
Yeah.
At least don't throw all the rules away.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So we agree on that.
Number one thing about him. And, I mean, they're gorgeous movies. They're well-written. They're well-acted. The cinematography is amazing. The soundtrack is always amazing.
I saw a little short feature to get into IMAX real quick. That was our third point for this review. is that apparently he innovated IMAX filmmaking. Like, yeah. He had a handheld, you see this guy with his humongous IMAX camera on his shoulder. There's a little short thing about this. I can put it on squarepegshirt.com. You know, this is stuff that the IMAX people, they're like, wow, I never thought about this. Because Christopher Nolan had presented that. Apparently that robot thing,
yeah,
that wasn't CG. That was all real.
Yeah.
But I was amazed by that.
There had to be some of it that was CGI.
But yeah, sure.
One of the things I do have to say about that robot is that is the worst fucking design of a robot I've ever seen. Cool.
It's like a Rubik's Cube or something.
It is the big rectangle from 2001 Space Odyssey come alive. And it's just like, this thing would never... Stairs? No. Not happening. I'm sorry.
Have you seen the epic rap battles of history for the Steven Spielberg versus...
No, not yet. Alfred Hitchcock?
Yeah.
Not
yet. Really funny.
Good. I will have to see that.
I won't tell you why. Yeah, you just got to watch it. Anybody,
that is the stupidest fucking design for a robot I've ever seen. Yeah. Now, I like their personalities, though. I thought that was actually kind of cool, because they were very human-like in their personality and the way they spoke. And
it kind of reminded me of some old sci-fi movies, like the robots with the personalities.
And it was, they were even funny at times. Yeah. Like their humor threshold or something like that? It was like, go ahead and bring it down a little bit.
Yeah, the movie could do some funny shit.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they broke the tension, but that's my whole thing, and especially with Nolan, is just like, you set me up with these rules. Don't rake them away.
Tell me a little bit more about your opinions on IMAX. Because for me, I watched the IMAX thing. Other than the length of the movie, I really think that like movie makers and theater owners should bring back the whole concept of intermission.
Yeah.
The 3-minute break in the middle. Because I get pissed off when my bladder is like, hey man, it's been 2 hours and 45 minutes. Okay. Right?
That's one thing. With Bladimus Minimus, I'm all about that.
And then secondly, I felt like you and I had different opinions about the IMAX experience, because I really felt like Nolan used it very well, the sound of it, even though there was issues, controversy about the sound.
Yes, yes.
But you had a different take on it, right?
I'm actually not an IMAX fan. And, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's awesome to have a screen that big for something, because, you know, that's one of the things about projection, is that the bigger the screen, you know, the more powerful projector you have to be able to really make this thing pop. And IMAX is relatively new as far as movie theaters are concerned. So, you know, they're learning as they're going here, but they're doing a great job. But to me, it's too big. It's actually too big.
It's like supersize me.
Yeah. Now, if I wanted, if, you know, I went, the first movie I think I saw in IMAX was the first Star Trek movie, the remake. And I was in the middle of the theater whenever I walked in, and that's what I do in every movie theater. I go to the very middle center point as I possibly can to find a seat. And that was the wrong thing to do. I had to be all the way in the back to be able to watch everything. I remember when the big theaters like the 24 in Orange Park, because that was a big screen for the time. That was before IMAX, and I got to a movie late. I think it was Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. We got to the movie late. We had to sit in the very first row, and I was like, "Fuck, this is way too big." And that's what I felt like sitting in the middle of IMAX. It was like I feel like I'm watching a tennis match. So, you know, there's no point in having a screen that big, because your eyes can't pull it all in. Now, does it envelop you into the world? Sure. It makes you kind of feel like you're in there. The audio systems are amazing in those theaters, for sure. But if I'm going to have to sit all the way back to be able to watch the whole screen, to me it's pointless to pay that much extra money for it.
The sound issue I mentioned earlier was that you can't hear some of the dialogue because the sound is so loud.
Yes.
And that's apparently Nolan's design.
Yes.
He does that in certain critical moments, which I kind of like that sometimes, actually, because I like the idea that you can't always hear somebody when they're saying something important.
Yep.
That's kind of neat. So it kind of throws you back. I don't know. Maybe in a way it makes you in the story a little bit more. Maybe.
Sure.
But yeah, man, I get that criticism. I feel like I do not want to see IMAX all the time.
Right.
But there are
certain movies.
Exactly. Like, and this was one of them. So I'm glad I saw it this way. I'm kind of curious how he did the film one, too.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that...
And he actually made that on actual celluloid film.
I don't know if he made two different movies. It seems like he would have to make two... I wish I knew more about the technical aspects of filmmaking, because from what I understand, he filmed it on actual film and then did the IMAX version,
which
I guess they convert to like something... I feel like I need to research that.
Their
rig
had to have like 7 cameras on
it. Yeah, I saw the actual film, and then I saw the IMAX camera on that featurette we're going to put on the site. And I was just like, the amount of film for that movie? I don't know. Anyway, that's Interstellar.
Yes. Go watch it. I would recommend.
Yeah.
For sure.
Video on demand, DVDs. If you can't watch the interview, watch Interstellar.
Oh, poor Seth Rogen.
Yeah. Okay, Marvel.
Yay!
Our second topic of the podcast.
Dude, I want to go ahead and say this, that I sat down and watched Guardians of the Galaxy about 4 more times since it's come out on DVD, and it totally holds up.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah, you know, you and I were talking about movie posters earlier, and that has like a classic movie poster.
Yes,
I felt like
yes,
you know
does.
The way that
feels like
all
the old Star Wars kind of posters.
And obviously, with Guardians of the Galaxy, it was a huge gamble. Mm. It was so strange for them to be like, "Yeah, let's do this space adventure comedy with a talking raccoon," and it paid off. And as we were looking at the box office results before we recorded tonight, the number one movie
number
of the year
movie.
So far.
Yep.
Right?
Absolutely.
Like, box office-wise, so that's pretty cool. But, you know,
and deserving so, because, oh, my God.
Marvel producer, you know, he's the guy with the big vision, Kevin Feige. Mm-hmm. And he invited the fans. You know, we last podcast, when we were talking about DC, it was like a stockholders meeting or some such. Mm-hmm. This time, you know, Marvel invites the fans over.
Right.
And he announces, like, a week after we did that one podcast, that there are big plans for Marvel movies coming up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, next year, 2015, we will have Avengers, Age of Ultron, and Ant-Man, right? Now, after that, we have, Kevin Feige straight up announced all of what they call Phase 3. Because
mm-hmm.
the two 2015 movies conclude Phase 2,
mm-hmm.
and now we have all of Phase 3. So that's Captain America Civil War, May 6, 2016. And that's something we've already talked about, where Robert Downey Jr. will guest star in the third Captain America movie.
We actually need to talk a little bit about that, because
sure.
there's been the whole talks with Sony Pictures about Spider-Man.
Yeah, but I don't think...
From what I understand...
it was one of the hacked emails, actually.
Yeah. Well, from what I understand, there was... Marvel was in talks with Sony Pictures to borrow Spider-Man. And it was something like, you know, we'll pay for 60% of the production cost and that kind of thing, and then we'll share the profits that way for Civil War, because Spider-Man's a big part of Civil War. so apparently that whole thing got canned. But then, because Sony Pictures and Sony are separate kind of entities, even though Sony is the umbrella company, the last thing I heard, now I haven't heard it get shot down yet, but the last thing I heard is that the higher-ups in Sony itself are still open to talking about this.
The hacked email made it... Sony gave Marvel a very bad deal.
Right.
They're like, we're going to control all of everything.
Yeah.
You just get to use Spider-Man in your movie,
right.
but we'll control what he does,
right.
the marketing. I don't know. I don't think it's going to happen,
particularly for
a movie coming out in 2016.
Right. And it probably won't, but... Just to have that door cracked open a little bit, holy crap. We need this. We need this in here.
This will also
that's a foot in the door to get our properties back to Marvel, back home.
I think it'll happen one day.
Yes.
Maybe in the 2020s, but not this decade. Sorry to be depressing.
No, you're probably right, but god dang it, I can hope.
Captain America Civil War will be the most Avengery non-Avengers movie, though, because with Iron Man and Captain America both at loggerheads, then that'll be interesting to see something like that pay off. Also in 2016, November 4th, will be Doctor Strange, which has official casting now of Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yay!
Who is a great actor.
Yes, he is.
And I think he'll be amazing as Doctor Strange.
Yep.
I am a little curious, though. Doctor Strange is such a powerful character, kind of like with Scarlet Witch in Avengers Age of Ultron.
Right.
And it's kind of strange to say this for a franchise that already has a talking raccoon and a big green monster and a Norse god. But when you introduce magic, Scarlet Witch, how powerful are you going to make her?
Right.
Doctor Strange? I think it would be a pretty interesting thing to see if they can make it, like, not too fantastical.
Right.
But still...
I think it's probably going to be a coming-of-age version of a magician story where, you know, he has no idea how powerful he can become, because this is obviously going to be an origin story. He's going to be limited to what he can do, even though his character thus far on the page is crazy powerful. He's, you know, other dimensionally amazing.
Right.
But,
and if you got access to that, then you can do practically anything.
Right. But, I mean, it's...
Superpower-wise.
You know, they're not going to have him nearly that far, of course.
Then they moved up the release date to Guardians of the Galaxy 2, because they were planning to release that August 2017. Instead, they're going to do May 5th. So it's a show that, you know, hey, that's a big blockbuster now. And the other movie in 2000, two more Marvel movies in 2017, Thor Ragnarok and Black Panther. Thor Ragnarok will be out July 28th, and Black Panther will be out November 5th. Black Panther will guest star in Captain America Civil War beforehand.
Awesome.
then that'll lead up. I never read much Black Panther comic books.
Yeah,
I know that he is in charge of an African country named Wakanda. And that's practically all I know about Black Panther. Thor Ragnarok, the word Ragnarok means like something like the end of time. So that's definitely the finality to Thor. You saw Thor Dark World.
I did, yes.
You know that it ended with Loki impersonating Odin.
Odin.
So I have a feeling they'll follow up on that for the third Thor movie.
Honestly, I wasn't really a big fan of the second Thor movie. It was just
the weakest out of all, except Iron Man 3.
Yeah. It was just kind of there and okay. I mean,
through the motions. Yeah. I agree.
But, I mean, I think what it really did was it served to get another one of these stones out of the way. So, you know, we got three stones already. So where are the other three going to be in this list that you have in your hand? Where are these other three movies or these other three stones going to be?
Well, I mean,
do you think they're going to push this all the way to the end of Phase 3?
Yeah, because I'm about to get to it. Avengers Infinity War Part 1, May 2018. Part 2, May 2019.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we got two more Marvel movies I'll mention in a little bit, right? Okay, but let's go ahead and talk about Avengers, right?
Yes.
That's the ultimate, like, MacGuffin. It's like, hey, man, we're chasing this cosmic stone. And that drives the plot in Guardians of the Galaxy. It drove the plot, apparently, in shit we didn't even know about, like Thor Dark World and Avengers 1.
Mm-hmm.
What else? Did I miss one of them?
No, those are the only three that we've seen. So
what do you got? Three more? Two more?
Yeah, three more.
So that's enough movies to kind of build up to that. But the question is, I feel like the stakes need to be very high, especially if they're concluding like multiple franchises in Avengers Infinity War.
Yep.
Is it going to be cool to see like a major like cosmic space odyssey with them fighting and trying to find the last stones, or maybe Thanos gets all the stones and has like complete power over bullshit?
I think at the close of Infinity War Part 1, he has to have had it and has been just decimating shit, and then the whole second movie is them going to take him out.
I'll be curious to see if like that's going to be good or not, because it probably won't involve Earth very much, or I hope it does, because I want it to kind of be grounded.
Sure.
But it'll be cool to see how they do a big spacefaring thing like that.
He'll have to have show up on the planet and just start knocking shit over. Right. I mean, that's about.
We can talk about the big finale a little bit more, but I did want to get to Captain Marvel, July 6, 2018, which will be the first female-led Marvel movie. Because Carol Danvers is Captain Marvel now.
Right.
Captain Marvel used to be a male character back in the day, and now a female character.
But there's been a couple of them. I mean, that's one of those pass the mantle kind of characters, right?
And then Inhumans, another property I don't know much about.
Yeah.
That's
the one with the dog and the...
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
November 3rd, 2018. Apparently, they've been already laying some of the groundwork for this in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I've heard.
Oh, okay.
So, that will probably, if they can do Inhumans right, will probably lead into Phase 4. Because, you know, these movies are going to keep on going, even if the major actors are not.
As long as there's money, I mean, they're going to go.
So now we got a pretty good blueprint for the next eight movies. Nine movies, right?
Yes.
That's nine movies.
Jesus
Christ. And that's not even counting Fox and Sony and Warner. I mean, if you hate superheroes and you try to go to the movies all the time,
now
is
not the time.
Yeah.
Now is the time to watch Netflix.
2016 looks ridiculous when you add up all the titles.
Yes.
But let's go back to this whole Thanos thing.
Yes.
Now, they're building it up. I mean, do you think they'll have Doctor Strange, Guardians of the Galaxy, et cetera, in the final event? Or I can't say final. In Avengers Infinity War Part 1, Part 2?
I'm hoping... Okay. There's the real nerd part of me that's like, I want every character ever in smash into this movie.
Yeah.
But then there's the actual movie critic in me that says there's no way you can make that work. Because, I mean, it's rough enough to already have, you know, what, seven Avengers.
Ten, apparently. The second Avengers would be like 10 major heroes.
So, you know, it's hard enough to wrangle that many characters to have enough screen time for everyone to be invested in it. If you got like 30 people in this story, there's no way. Now, is that why they're splitting this into two movies? Could possibly both of them be happening concurrently?
Like filming-wise?
Well, I mean, in story-wise. I mean, you know, you have this group of people over here doing something, this group of people over here doing something in the next movie, all happening
at the
same time.
That's like some Game of Thrones shit.
Yeah, and then, culminate at the very end of the last one. I think that would be pretty cool because, you know, you'd
have more time for the characters to shine and all that.
Yes. I doubt it's going to happen, though. So
it would be cool. Yeah, I like that.
It's probably going to be like, here, Avengers, be awesome. Take part of me and be awesome or something.
Well, you see this with multiple franchises. Hunger Games, just a, you know, the big movie nowadays is Hunger Games. Mm-hmm. Mockingjay. Part 1.
Yes.
Now, the book was only one book.
Right.
Now, they like to split that shit up as much as they can and get the most they can out of these actors that are bringing in. Or
I think that the first time I saw that happen was Harry Potter, actually. Was in the last two Harry Potter movies. They split it into two movies. Because there was a lot of ground to cover, even though to me it felt long-winded and a lot of downtime. And I don't want that to end up happening, but I think Marvel's spinning gold right now. They found some secret formula somewhere that says, hey, we know what the fuck we're doing, and we can do just about anything and poop gold, and it's going to be awesome. So as long as heads don't get too big, that's my only concern.
I do wonder if they will kill the major characters. You see the words Thor Ragnarok.
Right.
You see, I mean, Robert Downey Jr. is only going to be in four more movies now.
Right.
You know, Avengers 2, Captain America 3, and then this two-parter Avengers Infinity War thing, right? Are you going to kill the major character? Because recasting seems weird. recasting to me seems like, hey, we're going to milk it. I realize this is all about making money, but also it's about telling great stories. From what I hear about Joss Whedon's interviews with the Age of Ultron, he's like, man, this is Disney. This is a sequel to the third highest grossing movie of all time. I can't believe how much creative latitude they give me.
Right.
So it seems like they're doing right by the creative people.
Yes.
But I feel like if they milk it past Infinity War,
it's going to turn into Iron Man 3.
Which they've already, they have fumbled every now and then. Everything's not been, they haven't scored every time, but. You know, like, I really think they need to have definitive conclusions for at least the original character story arcs. Introduce Inhumans, Captain Marvel, all that, that's fine. But maybe conclude some of the first Marvel trilogies.
I don't know, that's tough, because that's a big hat to wear, number one, to especially when we're talking about two things. Number one, we're talking about characters on the page who've been around for decades and decades. You know, so it's like their story never ends. It's just another artist or another writer. But secondly, we're also talking about the kind of organization that has no trouble bringing people straight out of the grave without any trouble whatsoever. They're like, they're dead.
Like Marvel Comics?
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I mean. So it's like, you know,
it would get tedious if they kept doing that.
Well, that's going to be my problem, is if I do see any of these characters die, the first thing in my head, I'll be like, nah, they'll come back.
But at this point, like, I guess I mainly think about Iron Man, Captain America, and Thor.
Yes.
They'll have been in so many movies by now. They should retire. To me, they need to have a definitive ending instead of just keep going.
But is death that ending?
I don't know. I'm not saying they have to die. Maybe they could just quit. Hang up the hammer.
Like, well, that's another day. Get my pension.
But something else that Joss Whedon mentioned in a recent interview is that Kevin Feige was like, hey, we have all these individual franchises, right? Let's not do that for Hulk. Let's make Hulk a special situation so that people have been missing Hulk since Avengers 1. And when Avengers 2 comes out next May, people have been missing the character a lot. Well, and apparently, he's got a major role in Avengers 2.
So. Well, they tried that twice, and it didn't pan out either time. Yeah. So, but, I mean, honestly, the Ed Norton Hulk movie is part of this universe. Like, that was the Bruce Banner character that we saw in Avengers. I mean, it's the same character. So, you know, we already got our Hulk movie. It didn't really work out that great, so let's just fucking push on.
Which goes to show they will recast if need be, but that was... Yes. I don't know. I just hope they keep an eye on the story as opposed to just keep generating more and more movies.
But the thing, and I love the Hulk. I'm a big Hulk fan. But I mean, that's he doesn't really carry his own story very well unless you get into the deep psyche of Bruce Banner, which you can't really deliver on film as much as you can on the page because you have, you know, inner dialogue and such. So yeah, I mean, I absolutely agree. He should just be kind of a secondary character. Because as uninteresting as he was in the Ed Norton film, he was my favorite thing about Avengers. He was like my number one favorite thing.
It just took those three tries to get it right.
Yeah. So whenever I go back and watch Avengers, I just skip until I see the Hulk because it's awesome. And the design team and Lou Ferrigno doing the voice and Mark Ruffalo is an awesome Bruce Banner.
It's a funny thing though. You got the Ang Lee and the Edward Norton and this one. And the whole concept is the character, the human, is like, I don't want to show the thing that everybody went to the theater to see, right?
Yes.
So let the Hulk Be the Hulk.
Yes.
Let Hulk be Hulk.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. All right. All I know is that they got Hulkbuster armor coming in for Avengers 2, and I am excited. That is cool as shit to me.
Ultron doing little nursery rhymes, and then you'll have the Hulkbuster costume.
No strings on me. So you can tell this is a Disney film. But this is one more thing before we close out, is that one of the things that I'm really interested in is, because we're talking about Ultron here, does that mean we're going to have a Vision? Yes. Yes, we are. That's what I'm talking about.
I feel like the cast of characters they got with Scarlet Witch, Quicksilver, Vision will be like the old school Avengers.
Yeah.
Like the ones that, like, if you were a fan, or even if you went back and read the older ones from the 60s and 70s, mm-hmm. I mean, those are classic Avengers, you know? So
is it going to be red, yellow, and green Vision?
Nobody's seen the how he looks yet.
I'm really curious.
I didn't like the white one. Did you?
Honestly, I would take that over that horrible color scheme. Yeah. I would rather just have
comic book artists used to use, like, bright purples and reds and greens and yellows all the time.
And he was like, I have a green and yellow suit with a red face. And I'm like, who fucking put your shit together, bro? We need to work on this.
Have you seen Wonder Man? You ever heard of Wonder Man?
Oh, yeah, I have.
He is, like, the most rockin', or not rockin', like, a strange-looking, like, 70s disco kind of guy. He's the funniest costume out of all of them. I think Joss Whedon said, I don't get Wonder Man.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to have him in the movie.
No, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of F-list Marvel characters. So.
Beast should show up.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Okay, well, that's the podcast, everybody.
Guys, thank you so much. It's been an awesome year.
Yep.
Can't wait for the next one.
Next post will be a full list of every 2014 Square Peg show episode, in case you missed any of them.
Yep.
Well, lots of good highlights throughout the year, or at least, you know, my unbiased opinion.
Yes.
We hope
are our own
enjoy.
Worst critics, so.
And we will see you again next year, probably around March or so.
Yep. Actually, hopefully around February for the comic convention in Orlando. Woo woo!
Excellent.
You guys should come down if you can.
Yep, MegaCon Orlando.
See you guys next year.
Yep, Jesse has a few more things to say about where you can buy it.
Hey guys, just a quick reminder that if any of you would like to be on the show, suggest topics for the show, or just have questions or comments, please let us know at squarepegshow@gmail.com or on our website, squarepegshow.com. You can also follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and subscribe to us on iTunes. So until next time, guys, be square.